Doesn't matter what.
You're all set.
What pocket or?
Yep, no, it's wherever. Stick her in there, and I'll come get it when you're done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's take one or more of these and pass them around. Okay. Well. Oh. There he is. All right. How are you? Okay. I don't know how in the world I'm going to finish what I said I wanted to do, but we'll see. I got this. Lori got me this Bible a couple years ago, and I've been putting my outlines in. It's got a blank page next to every printed page, which sometimes is because the offset didn't work right. This is on purpose. So I've been putting my outline in here, and I've spent the whole day working on this, not knowing whether or not I'd be able to see this far. The desk, it's this close, and I found a lot of times putting notes in my Bible, it works great at the desk, then I stand up somewhere and close it up and get the other Bible out. But what I've given you is everything for the 4 weeks. And what I have been doing all my life is trying to develop outlines of every book of the Bible. My own outline, which comes from all these other sources. And Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are ones that we finished a while back. And there's a lot more detail than what's on these pages. But the point that I want to do is, first of all, to overview the outline each week to get an idea of the structure of each book. That's sort of like, you know, technical. Okay, now what do I do with this? The point of mine want to get across is that if we get the structure of the book, then we're better able to know how to use the book. And where I'm headed in this is to use the book to tell the story to anybody you can tell it to be able to tell it, or at least have it in your mind, at least a general outline of the life of Christ, and understand that that's how each book ends. Each book ends with the people being told, go tell this. You know, go talk about this. And that's what they did in Acts. Acts is full of sermons about the life of Christ, a lot about the resurrection, of course, eventually in each one of them. And so that is my basic goal. If you look at the Matthew part, which should be front and back on two pages. And then after that is a little, what is a PowerPoint lesson. And I'm going to explain that next because it came out of a little exercise I did on Facebook a couple years ago in September. I challenged people to read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John once a week from then till the end of the year. And it just happened to be in September, to read each book every week for that amount of time. You can do it any way you want. You can read a different version every week. You can, I told them to read it backwards one week, and people didn't. I did. I learned in proofreading from a guy named Dowell Flatt that you can proofread backwards and find all kinds of stuff that you didn't see. Well, I also found that going through a thing backwards picks up stuff. And we do that without thinking about it sometimes, that we're actually going backwards through an article or, you know, just about anything. Pick up a book in the store and you look at the end of it first. So you actually can pick up. So we had, like, from September to December to read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John every week. And it was a little harder than I thought to make it happen every week, but I did it, and a few other people did. And these four PowerPoints are the results of my reading. Lessons from reading again and again. So at the end of all of that, I did these four sermons. and each one had the same points. The strength I saw in those who were hurting or grieving. They really did want him dead, and the soul of Jesus. And so those were the basic points of each one. And we'll talk about that a little later tonight. But you have an outline of each book and one of these for each book in your handout. You can do whatever you want to do with that. And then the next thing was, which is not in your handout, and that is to learn how to use this information to talk to people, to strike up a conversation, or to, while a conversation is going on, to be able to talk about the life of Jesus like you could talk about so many other subjects in your life, including people. And in that story is the basis of what happened in Acts. The fact that that is a true story, it's told four times, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, very briefly. You know, I got a thing from the preacher at Bridgeport the other day. Today, he asked me to send a bio for this lesson Sunday morning, and I said, I'll send you my bio. I said, but it's three volumes. He said, or he wrote back and said, I love to read. And I thought, well, now I got to get somebody to write it for me. But the truth is that it's fiction, so I shouldn't be too hard to get anybody to add a chapter. What? So anyway, the idea is I have biographies in my library that are several volumes. I used to have a 5-volume biography of Woodrow Wilson, which I never read. I bought it at a used book sale because it looked good in the living room bookcase. And I gave it away to a lady in Georgia when we left, and I think she has read it. But I don't know that I would, what it would take for me to read 5 volumes about Woodrow Wilson. But it was almost as wide as this thing. Well, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are only like this, no matter where you find them. And they're the same thing told 4 times. I mean, a lot of it is the same. So we can learn this story. That's what I'm trying to say. We can learn this story. A lot of people read the Sunday paper, especially if it's a big city paper, on Sunday afternoon, and they have read as much nearly as there is in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, if not more. And they can tell you what they read and where stuff is in that paper, because they're familiar with it. So if we're going to get this job done in our lifetime of telling this story, we have to know it. So my theory is that getting the structure of the book in your mind makes it easier to find some things, if not all of them, and you could go to those places if you can't tell it. I can't tell stories well, but if I can learn where to find these things, then I could go there and talk about it and always have a Bible nearby. Wherever you go, have at least one of them. And today we have Bibles on virtually everything. You know, you have a Bible on all your devices, probably a bunch of them, and you could easily do that. So before we move into any of the, just the looking at Matthew, the way it's set up, does anybody have a question or comment on where I'm headed in this? Feel free to go to another class. I went to a lectureship 1 year in Memphis, and I was the speaker at one of these classes, and I said, Alan Webster is over there, in case you got lost on your way. But so anyway, that's what we're doing. The title that I've given, Jesus the Messiah, is not a new thing to call Matthew a book about the Messiah. Matthew is loaded with quotations from the Old Testament repeatedly, more than, as far as I can tell, any of the other three. And maybe that's providentially why it's first in our Bible, New Testament, is that it is written over and over and over. It says that in Matthew, and it's linking up with what you just finished reading. and that he is the Messiah. He is that person that all these prophecies talk about. So the outline that I have has five main points in it, and the third one is the big one. That is the section that is about his work. And I'm not minimizing the other ones. Matthew and Luke start with the birth of Jesus. Mark and John don't mention it. They all have very interesting beginnings, but they all get to this and concentrate a large part of their book on the activity and preaching of Jesus. So what I want to do for just a little bit of our time is just go down to number three on the Roman numeral, the preaching and work of the Messiah. And I don't remember if I found this somewhere else or if I found it myself, but these sections starting in A, B, C are alternate. You have activity, preaching, activity, preaching. There's 10 of these, 5 of each, starting in Matthew 4:12 and going through the end of 25. So you have A, the multitudes follow him. This is right after the temptation. He's just beginning, just now going out. And then you have a discourse, the Sermon on the Mount, as we call it, 5, 6, and 7. If you turn to the other side, the top of the backside, miracles and short lessons, 2 chapters, second discourse. And it just, this is the arrangement. Activity and a fairly long lesson. Well, that's not hard to remember. You know, one back and forth with 2 different things. There's this, then there's one of these, then there's this, and another one of these. And so you have that arrangement in Matthew in this big section that is primarily a lot of activity and then some sort of a lesson. And so we have the miracles and short lessons, 8:1 to 9:35. That's almost 2 chapters, 14 things. Personally, I don't like to have anywhere near that many points in a row. And if I were to take this outline and refine it, I would take those 14 and figure out where Jesus was. And maybe there would be 4 in this town and 3 in this town. And it would outline itself, which is that's what I'm looking for, is what is the outline Matthew used? Not what is the outline I'd like to think Matthew used. That's a different thing. And so you could actually break that down a little bit. But still, you see all this activity in 8 and 9. And then what we call the limited condition commission, the Bible doesn't call it that. And truly, most of this speech is about the future anyway. It's about the later part of their lives, what's going to happen to them down the road, which is not the limited commission, but Acts and the rest of their lives, but it's still part of what he says when he sends them out here. And then the response to his teaching, this includes a variety of situations, John and Jesus, rebuke and invitation, so forth. And then F, the parable, 7 of them. You notice under the parables I have 8 points, and that's because, you know, there's 2 parables that Jesus explained. The parable of the sower, he explains right after he gave it, but the parable of the tares is explained later. So there's explanation is in a different section. So that makes 8 sections for 7 parables. And that's why you have number 5 where it is, just to keep it in order. And then the decline in popularity, that's not my phrase. That's a very common term to use, people use. The Thompson Chain Reference Bible uses that kind of language in its outline, and others do. And you have a variety of situations, and you have Jesus now. He has already predicted his death in chapter 12, but he's going to predict it regularly now, because by the time you get to chapter 16 or so, you're really close to the end. It is amazing to me how fast all 4 writers get to the end of his life, the last few days. John is there in chapter 12, I think, and the others are there in 21 and 11. And about chapter 9 of Luke, he's only 6 months to live. Chapter 9. So, you know, they get to that, but they have all these events in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. Is the book of John, heard covers the last 6 months generally of the life of Christ, or is that true?
I don't know if... it may be a lot of it is that, because he gets to the last week so soon. 13 is the last night, you know. So I haven't thought about that. But, you know, he's in the early part of his ministry in chapter 1 and 2. And I don't know how late chronologically Nicodemus would be, but probably that's not too far off to say that a lot of this is really close to John 6. Many of them left him and followed him no more. That would almost certainly not be early. If anyone has any input on that, you're welcome to bring it up. But I'll look some more for that one on for a couple weeks from now. But
Truth of the World series on the life of Christ, and I'm trying to look like crazy remember, but he actually puts a percentage, which I seem to remember 45% or something like that, or 40%, that's what it is, of John is last week.
The last week, it is truly. But the 6 month, I'm not sure if I could. Now, the fourfold gospel, which is a harmony, you know, but and even those are not all alike, might give you, he might, in A.T. Robertson's harmony, I think he puts maybe a few more dates, which are sometimes guesswork. But you can't be too far off if the whole ministry of Jesus is just a little over 3 years, you know. And then you think about how many of these events we have, and then how many we don't have. How many things did he do that we don't? It just amazes me. And amazes me, I'm getting off a little bit, about the things Jesus didn't do. Sometimes I think about this guy in Acts 3 that Jesus, or the Peter and John healed, and he was over 40 years old. So he was a lame boy for years before Jesus was born. And Jesus never healed him. How many times did he walk by him? Did he ever talk to him? But he was lame his whole life, and he was older than Jesus. So he didn't do everything, and he couldn't. I mean, that wasn't the point of coming here to fix all of that in every situation. But he did do a lot. And these four brief books are brief maybe for that reason, to keep us from getting bogged down and not being able to tell the story. So anyway, on G you have the decline in popularity, which includes the some more opposition, and also he starts predicting his death, and he adds information to that every time. 16 he does it, 17 is twice, I think, and so that's going to happen. And then on the third page, it says the fourth discourse is H, humility and forgiveness, the parable about two servant debtors. I think that's incredible that here these men have now gotten 3 years of training, and they're light years away from understanding some of the simplest things. And that when Jesus would say, "I'm going to die," and they would say, "Can I be great, the greatest in your kingdom?" You know, he just finished saying some of these profound things, and they're still on that. And it's no wonder he got a little exasperated now and then. So here in John or Matthew 18, there are connections, and this is not what we're here for, but in the starting this chapter off with the humility of the little children, and then he does this thing about how to get along with each other in the church, and then he gives this long parable about forgiveness. I think that in a way it's all connected, because who is better at forgiving than a little kid? I mean, how many of us are parents? How many of us have memories of our children forgiving fast. And we sit back and wonder, how did you do that? What I just said doesn't merit what you just did. I don't deserve what you just gave me. And they do it over and over again, and they run to you when they're forgiving you. So, you know, there's a lot about that, I think, in that discourse, and they're going to need that. And then I, from Galilee to Jerusalem, so you have all of this information on the last journey, and you don't have to know all of this in detail, but the flow of the story. We had a guy that did a devotion at the Lord's table the other day in Tennessee. We didn't do that. We didn't have devotionals at the Lord's table. So I got to where I got used to that. Now we have them, which is fine, but this man spent 5, 6, 7 minutes, and he just did what I'm saying. He just rehearsed the life of Jesus in a matter of minutes, and he did it right. So we can do this. And then, you know, and that can appeal to somebody. It can be something that they might want to know more about. So you have all of those events. There's 18 in this one. And then the fifth discourse, as we have it listed here, is that it doesn't necessarily mean this is all one speech, but it's all in together. The woe to the Pharisees, the hypocrites, and then the destruction of Jerusalem and second coming lessons were at least close together in time and all grouped as one unit, at least, in Matthew. On the bottom of that, where it says cross of Messiah, the very last line, I was putting all these notes in this Bible today, trying to get this outline done, and I actually can read it from this distance. It says Saturday 27, 62 to 64. That's supposed to be 66. I have no idea how many times I proofread this when we did it years ago. And I actually looked at my notes. I have them handwritten outline. And it's right in the handwritten, so I don't know how I missed this one, but as far as I know, that's the only mistake in here. And then the last one is the resurrection chapter. And I would, just as a matter of saying something I'll probably say every week, the Great Commission is in all four of these books. And it is different in all four books. And the Great Commission, I learned this from Franklin Camp in the 70s at Memphis School of Preaching Lectureship. The Great Commission in each book is clearly related, connected to the theme of the book, or at least one of them. For example, Luke is the only one that mentions repentance in the Great Commission, and he mentions repentance all through his book. Chapter 15 is all parables about repentance. So, anyway, the Great Commission isn't just the end of a chapter or a verse in a chapter. It's each one of them, Matthew 28, Mark 16, Luke 24, and John 20, each one starts with the tomb being empty. That's why there is a Great Commission. And so the Great Commission, apart from the empty tomb, is just a couple of rules. And I'm not saying that that's not important, but, you know, maybe some of us have experienced a lot fewer conversions because we haven't started telling this at an earlier place, like Matthew 1, or at least Matthew 28, 1. You know, the ladies were told in Matthew 28, when the tomb was empty, come, see, then what? Go tell. Well, unless you come and see the empty tomb, you're not going to know how to go and tell or what to say anyway. So what is the last three verses for? What are they for if you haven't been eternally changed by the first 17 verses? So that's kind of what what I'm trying to get across is that. I don't know if any of you know Edwin Jones, but you get on his Facebook and become a friend. Edwin is at, in Bowling Green, Kentucky now, but he was at East Tennessee for 30-some years as an elder, teacher, instructor, and a variety of other things. We took some classes together in the Alabama Christian School of Religion here, Parkersburg, North End, and wherever else we had classes back then. And he is a incredibly brilliant person. But he's done a lot of help in his notes on Facebook for me the last few years of trying to get this point in my head about how important Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are. For the story we need to tell people is right here. And it ends up with hear, believe, repent, confess, be baptized, and all those other things that are essential. But the story is the thing that gets the audience attention. And it did it in every sermon in Acts. Every sermon in Acts somehow gets to the life of Jesus and his empty tomb. Acts 2, Acts 10, Acts 13, they're always doing that. And I don't know why. I've been in this for 50 years now in about 4 months, 50 years in a few months. What, do you ever look at yourself in the mirror and say, are you ever going to figure this out? What took you so long to get where you are? You know, my mom used to say, can I get that through your thick skull or use your head for something besides a hat rack? I don't even have a hat. But, you know, you have all this time and you think, maybe I should have picked up on this better. But Edwin is very good at getting people to think about some of these things that are right in front of us that maybe we haven't done anything with. It's one thing to read through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John every week for 16 or 17 weeks. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? I mean, I guess I could read Woodrow Wilson's biography this year. What am I going to do with it when I get done? Well, I can't tell you because I don't know what's in it. I have no idea what's in it. And if I'm not familiar with this, then I can't tell you what I'm going to do with it. How am I going to use Matthew? In the last week, I'm going to give you another handout, if I remember, that will give you a thing to do with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And hopefully that will be of practical use as well. I want to go to the PowerPoint thing. If you don't have, feel free to say something else right now if you have any questions or comments on what we've looked at so far. On that, again, I said this came out of that exercise 2 or 3 years ago, whenever it was, when we did. I read these books from a variety of versions once a week for that amount of time. And lessons from reading again and again. And that's, first of all, is Matthew. And the introductory type thing is it's written and fulfilled. That is right there. As soon as you open Matthew, you read a genealogy. The first 17 verses of Matthew are, in one way or another, a quotation from the Old Testament. I don't know how many people would begin a book that way. Most uninspired people would never think of it. But then in that same chapter, as it's divided, he quotes Isaiah 7:14, and then a bunch of them in the second chapter and in the third chapter. And in the fourth chapter, the devil gets into quoting the scripture. So, you know, it is written all through this book. And so that it would be hard to read Matthew and not have that jump out at you, that he is connecting these old and new things, which means that every time he does that, you can go back to the old and do your own homework, because most of these quotations are partial. Rarely does a New Testament speaker quote the entire thing. Joel 2, the whole prophecy is quoted, but most of the time, And in, for example, the Micah 5:2 that Matthew quotes here, he doesn't quote the whole prophecy. He doesn't quote the part that tells us that this baby who was born has his goings forth were from old. He didn't say that because that's not what the part he needed. But it's in the prophecy. So you go back to all these prophecies, and most, if not every time, you're going to get more that you can use to understand Matthew, who is trying to get you to understand, as Dan said in the prayer a while ago, to understand God and his Son. Isn't that what we're talking about? Understanding the character and nature of God and his Son, and that's why we want to talk about it. You know, we want to talk about the people that we understand and believe in their character. So that's how this began. But then when I was writing these notes down, my first point for here is the strength I saw in those who were sick, hurting, and grieving. So Matthew, in addition to telling me about Jesus and locations and all these other very important and useful things, he tells us about people, about the people that we are, the people we're going to be around, the people we're going to hear about, and how we can react to them, identify with them. And the older I get as a preacher, and the church, in a way, it's sad that the church is getting older and not including more younger. We have one 11-year-old child at Sistersville. The next youngest person is in her 20s. You know, that's not the way it was when I started. It wasn't like that. So we have a lot of older people, and guess what they are? They're hurting, and they're grieving, and they're wondering. And so Matthew talks about those people who are having those situations in their lives. And like we have Matthew 8 here, 7 events in one chapter. So Matthew groups these things. Whether it's chronological or not at this point isn't even what I need to know about. It's just that here they are. Just you read the sick list at church now. Do you feel like sometimes you're just not going to get done? It's so long, and it's just, and you ask if anybody has any more, and they're last night. We had 11 people, and I said, anybody, any updates on the sick? And I got about a half a dozen updates on people who were sick, who had died, injuries. So we need to know how to handle that. And part of it is seeing how they handle their own situation. And so Matthew does that. So you have these situations in Matthew, and these are just samples. It's not an effort to give all of it. These lists are not, mostly are not intended to be complete, because that's for you to find. That's for you to read. So you say, well, I got this chart. Everything about Matthew's in this chart. No, it isn't. And please don't think that. But then I went into they really did want him dead. And you really get a lot of that in Matthew. The others are going to say it too, as we'll see. But from the time he was a baby, Matthew gives us this. Somebody wanted Jesus dead. They wanted him dead now. Wanted him dead so badly that they made sure that everybody like that was also dead today, you know. And that's a very powerful way that sin works, to think that that's how serious this was to this man, that he was going to... But kings did that, didn't they? I mean, Herod wasn't new at murdering people. And then you read through this. I have all these this list here of situations where it's clear that they plotted against him. He could read their minds, knew they were doing that. They would meet. They would think about killing him while he's talking. he would say something about it. I mean, just variety of things. And then those are all in the earlier. And then I have the rest, Matthew 26. This is the actual trial and agony of his last hours. You'll find, too, if you read through this, we have, and I don't think there's anything wrong with this, we have done lessons on what it was like to be crucified, you know, the graphic display. I have one of those. I use it. The discussion of what it meant to be flogged and what you would look like after that. And Old Testament does actually give some detail on that, but in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, it just says they whipped him and took him out to crucify. It doesn't even describe it. The description of the beating is not in here. The description of what a crucifixion was, it just said, Matthew does, I don't think Matthew even says they crucified him. I think he said they took him out to crucify him. Luke says there they crucified him. And that's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. That doesn't mean that that isn't important to learn about, but what else happened? They do tell us that. They do tell us the trial, the things they said to him. You know, I wrote an article one time about this. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt, will never hurt me. And I said, in my case, that's exactly backwards. You know, I can't remember any time my mother ever spanked me, but I can remember some of the stuff she said to me. And it still gets me every now and then. So, you know, so you read in the last hours of Jesus' life about these things that they said, or Matthew knew that they were, and they were, out of all of this, attempting to reach a conclusion that was correct to them. He is guilty. I think some of them didn't care if it was correct or not. They just wanted the powers to somehow reach that conclusion. And then 27, more of the same at all of this, and he died. So that's important. I think that's important. How many of you have ever seen Thomas Jefferson's little Bible? I have a copy of it in my library, and it's he does Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and he takes out all of the every reference, because I read it. He took out every reference that Jesus ever made to the fact that he was going to die. All the miracles are out, and not a line about resurrection. So what is that? What are you left with? You know, what are you left with if you take out the story? The storyline is gone, and so you're left, and it ends that way. It ends with nothing. It just closes with Jesus dead. But that's not how this is. There is a chapter 28 in Matthew, and he didn't stay dead. He is not here. He is risen. And that's another thing I thought about, and I don't know why I never thought about this till just very recently. There's no description of the resurrection, is there? What did that look like? I don't know what it looked like. I just know that at one point the tomb is sealed, and the next point the tomb is empty. You know, we don't have that picture. We could imagine it and probably be way far away from how spectacular it might have been, but who knows? It might have been one of the most simple moments in history, but he was gone. And then the soul of Jesus. I forget who the speaker was, but a long time ago in a lectureship on Matthew 9, 36 to 38, somebody did a talk about some of the words there. So I entered that in here as times in Matthew where, and the same is true with the other writers, where you see now Jesus observing all of this stuff in his life, and you see his soul. You see what he's about when he has this compassion when he says, come unto me, all ye are labor. And he, all these things he says, and they're all the way, these are just a, this is a very short list of those, where you see the kind of man he was from the human person who sees everybody else's good and bad, and how he responds to that, and that you see who he really is. And then Matthew, Mark, and Luke all talk about the transfiguration. Matthew 17, and Mark 9, and Luke 9. So I put that in because when Peter is writing 2 Peter, and he's going to make 2 points about Jesus. One has to do with prophecy. The other one is an event, isn't it, in Jesus' life. He says, when we were with him on the Holy Mount. Of all the events that Jesus, Peter could have picked to use to motivate them that day, he picked that one. So there's something about the transfiguration that we need to focus on and learn from, and we can use it, and Peter was using it when he was about to die, because he had just said, I'm going to make my decease pretty soon, and here's what I want to leave you with, sort of. And so the transfiguration, I think, becomes very important. And you'll see that if you go to the outline, you'll see the transfiguration right before it has a prediction of Jesus' death in Matthew 16, and right after it, 2 times in Matthew 17, he predicts it. So those are really remarkable events all sandwiched up together. And then how will you respond to him is just an invitation that each one of these PowerPoint lessons would have. But that's as a result of viewing the book of Matthew, trying to get some perspective on what the book can do, what can send you to the world with the gospel. That's what it can do, and that's what the life of Jesus did for these men. And so this is the life that we have. We have Matthew's record of it to send us out and to send us with something to tell, something to say about him to a world that doesn't know anything about this. And what little they know about Jesus is so wrong, distorted, incomplete, pretty much useless, that somebody needs to be able to do that. And I think as a result of this last 2 or 3 years of figuring some of this out, maybe, that this is truly a simple platform for getting out this message to the world. That this is the message, is the this person. And I'm not, I read a Facebook comment just the other day. Somebody was trying to get, I think it was a point like this, and somebody responds and says, it sounds like you're doing the plan and the man and not the plan lesson. And I thought, how far could you miss what he just wrote than that? The man is the plan, and there is a whole lot of other stuff that goes with this, but we're not there tonight. We're not in Romans, we're in Matthew, you know, so we're not in any way minimizing another thing because we emphasize this thing. And the life of Jesus is surely something worth knowing and telling, and being able to, even if we can't say, well, I know it's where it is in Matthew. We know it's in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. And how hard is that to find? When you've got the Bible that I used for many years, 137 pages to tell the same story 4 times. Well, it shouldn't be too hard to find some big information in that if I look a little bit, especially if I've read it again and again. Have you ever read any books in your library besides the Bible again and again? I don't want you to know how many times I've read The Hunger Games, but or I told somebody about my age a while back that I read Harry Potter, and I think she thought I was a heretic, but I just read it. I didn't.
Harry.
Never mind. So, you know, but you do read, we do read some things over and over. I mean, I'll read Lone Ranger books over and over, except you, if you read them once, I think you pretty much read them all. Anyway, why wouldn't we be people who have read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John over and over again? Really, over and over again. And since we have a variety of ways of doing that today, not only with translations, but audio, variety of audio things we could probably listen to, why wouldn't we take advantage of that and become more able to talk about it? Well, that's pretty much what I had in mind. There's a few minutes left. Anybody? Question, comment, idea?
Do you think challenging people about the things in Matthew on the social media is a good idea? I mean, can you take just a portion of what you have learned and put it out there and just let the piranha attack?
Well,
whatever, and do they deserve a response?
Right. I think I have. This is kind of going to be kind of a possible long response, but I have a couple of friends on Facebook that I grew up with in East Detroit that I haven't talked to since the 60s. One of them is a girl that I never did talk to. We went from kindergarten to high school together, and I was so afraid of girls that I never did talk to her. Her brother was one of my friends. When I would go to his house, I would avoid. Well, we're friends on Facebook. Well, she's not a Christian. Another kid down that same street was a twin, and we were really good friends. And he is in Atlanta, and he is a big shot homosexual in Atlanta. So I've got these friends on Facebook that, and I think about, okay, what am I going to post? What am I going to repost? What am I going to have the courage to say, and how am I going to put this out there with the desire to see if I can open a door or get in? And so I do. And, you know, Ken is this guy's name in Atlanta, and every now and then, you know, we'll say something to each other that clearly addresses our differences. But I put a thing on Facebook a couple years ago. I said something about, please tell me something about your favorite Bible character and why. He was one of the first ones to respond. This guy's very religious. He is as out there as you can be on a lot of things, but he's not ignorant of the text of the Bible. And so I have tried to figure out how do I say something to Wayne that's not going to drive Ken away because he can see it too. You know, when I think a lot of us are doing that, I think we are instantly driving away people by talking about stuff that is a lot of times not important enough to talk about here, much less in the... So that's a hard question, and I think we need to take the risk to put stuff out there, knowing that Jesus did. He took the risk to say whatever needed to be said, knowing before he said it every time what was going to happen. So we have to go ahead and take the risk of saying stuff and trying to, if whatever we have done is right, whatever you put out there is pleasing to God, then you're not responsible for what people do with it. You know, when Jesus said this and the Pharisees said, kill him, he wasn't to blame for having said that. So, but it isn't easy to figure out. And I wrote to him one time, I think it was a message I said to my lifelong friend, you know, and he didn't cut me off, so, you know, we still can communicate. But I think that's very interesting. And I think that this kind of thing is a way of maybe getting a foundation laid where there can be some sort of discussion where, you know, maybe a result would be good at some point. I don't know if that's anywhere near what you were asking me, but that's what I have to say about it. Anyone else? Okay, well, your assignment for next week is to read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Whatever you can read of it. But Mark will be the one we look at next week, and we'll see what we come up with. Thank you very much. I do smell something that smells like food or drink. Thank you. Do we have any extras? I think I'm just going to leave these here. I have to lug them back and forth. Thank you.
He's leaving for Kenya Tuesday.
So oh, wow.
Don't take offense that I'm not going to be back.
Thank you. You really? Well, well, I think I'm going to Kenya after that. Whoa. You really are willing to bite the bullet, aren't you? Arkansas.
I'm going to the moon.
I've lived all around Arkansas and still don't want to go there.
One time I got a call about a lectureship. I said, you know, I can't go because I'm going to be in, where was I going to be? I was going to be in Wyoming. Mm.
You remember, in fact, it was right after I was in Georgia. And oh, next year, the same guy called me. He said, fuck everything. I'll be in Israel. This is starting to sound like I'm making this stuff up. I said, next year, you're going to call me. I'm going to say, I'll be on Mars. Yeah, say,
I don't know where, what week it's going to be next year, but I'm going to be
even farther away.
Oh, boy.
I was just telling Mary Amy on the way here. I found some place, I think it was a used book sale or something, but I am reading a book right now by a guy, and I first heard him on the radio, and I started to check, find out who it was. Are you familiar with Ravi Zacharias?
I've heard that name. I actually have. Yeah. I don't know where, but I have heard it.
I heard him, it was a Sunday morning, and I got sick of the Methodists, so I was looking for something. And it was local station, but obviously he was syndicated.
Okay.
But he's an Indian Christian apologist.
Wow.
And
that's all I know.
He's a conservative Protestant of some kind.
Yeah.
But he was absolutely brilliant when I was listening to him. But this book is called Jesus Among the Gods.
Hmm.
And it is the setting forth of what makes Jesus unique to the unbiased observer. Everybody wants to say, we've got your God. The only reason you prefer him is because he's looking up. But this is an effort to demonstrate the uniqueness of Jesus. And I'm telling you, it's a little book. And I was just telling her, I said, this one section, I said, just blew my mind. I had to go back and read it again. And I'm trying to tell her what it said. And I said, I seem like to go back and read it the third time. Because it's... It shouldn't be. It's not written with words you can't understand, but the concepts he's dealing with.
Last year I didn't end up.
It's extraordinary. You ever heard of that guy?
No.
Rabbi Zacharias.
Is it online?
I'm sure it is. It's not the
Rabbi.
Rabbi's an Indian.
Yeah.
Rabbi.
Rabbi.
Going to retirement.
Zacharias.
Yeah. I'm going. Yeah, she they cruise and go to the hotel.
Does she really?
That's what happened in India. They would change her name when they were baptized. So
well, his family was not, although he claims his grandmother was, but his own father was Hindu or whatever. So that may be. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I had a Sunday, I don't know what year it was, in India, where two people were baptized and they wanted me to change their name. I'd already thought about what I might use. Just laugh at me.
Oh, no, this is all been recorded.